As for him, I don't know who he is, never seen him before in my life.
You shot him?
That's right.
And you threw fire at him?
Yes, I did. Stephanie's legs felt weak and her head felt light.
Mr. Pleasant, you're a skeleton.
Ah, yes, back to the crux of the matter. Yes, I am, as you say, a skeleton. I have been one for a few years now.
Am I going mad?
I hope not.
So you're real? You actually exist?
Presumably.
You mean you're not sure if you exist or not?
I'm fairly certain. I mean, I could be wrong. I could be some ghastly hallucination, a figment of my imagination.
You might be a figment of your own imagination.
Stranger things have happened, and do, with alarming regularity.
This is too weird.
Skullduggery put his gloved hands in his pockets and cocked his head. He had no eyeballs, so it was hard to tell if he was looking at her or not.
You know, I met your uncle under similar circumstances.
Well, kind of similar, but he was drunk. And we were in a bar. And he had vomited on my shoes, so I suppose the actual circumstances aren't overly similar, but both events include a meeting, so my point is, he was having some trouble, and I was there to lend a hand, and we became good friends after that. Good friends. His head tilted. You look like you might faint.
Stephanie nodded slowly. I've never fainted before, but I think you might be right.
Do you want me to catch you if you fall, or...
If you wouldn't mind.
No problem at all.
Thank you.
Stephanie gave him a weak smile, and then darkness clouded her vision, and she felt herself falling, and the last thing she saw was Skullduggery Pleasant darting across the room towards her. Stephanie awoke on the couch with a blanket over her. The room was dark, lit only by two lamps in opposite corners. She looked over at the broken window, saw that it was now boarded up. She heard a hammering from the hall, and when she felt strong enough to stand, she slowly rose and walked out of the living room. Skullduggery Pleasant was trying to hang the door back on its hinges. He had his shirt sleeve rolled up on his left forearm. Ulna, Stephanie corrected herself, proving that her first year of biology class had not gone to waste. Or was it Radius? Or both? She heard him mutter, then he noticed her and nodded brightly.
Ah, you're up.
You fixed the window.
Well, covered it up. Gordon had a few pieces of timber out back, so I did what I could. Not having the same luck with the door, though. I find it much easier to blast them off than put them back. How are you feeling?
I'm okay, Stephanie said.
A cup of hot tea, that's what you need, lots of sugar. He abandoned the door and guided her to the kitchen. She sat at the table while he boiled the water. Hungry? He asked when it had boiled. But she shook her head. Milk? She nodded. He added milk and spoonfuls of sugar, gave the tea a quick stir and put the cup on the table in front of her. She took a sip. It was hot, but nice.
Thank you,
Stephanie said, and he gave a little shrug. It was hard discerning some of his gestures without a face to go by, but she took the shrug to mean, think nothing of it.
Was that magic? With the fire and blasting the door?
Yes, it was.
She peered closer. How can you talk?
Sorry?
How can you talk? You move your mouth when you speak, but you've got no tongue, you've got no lips, you've got no vocal cords. I mean, I know what skeletons look like. I've seen diagrams and models and stuff, and the only things that hold them together are flesh and skin and ligaments, so why don't you just fall apart?
He gave another shrug, both shoulders this time. Well, that's magic, too. She looked at him.
Magic's pretty handy.
Yes, magic is.
And what about, you know, nerve endings? Can you feel pain?
I can, but that's not a bad thing. Pain lets you know when you're alive, after all.
And are you alive?
Well, technically, no, but... She peered into his empty eye sockets.
Do you have a brain?
He laughed. I don't have a brain, I don't have any organs, but I have a consciousness. He started clearing away the sugar and the milk. To be honest with you, it's not even my head.
What?
It's not. They ran away with my skull. I won this one in a poker game.
That's not even yours. How does it feel?
It'll do. It'll do until I finally get around to getting my own head back. You look faintly disgusted.
Doesn't it feel weird? It'd be like wearing someone else's socks.
You get used to it.
What happened to you?
She asked.
Were you born like this?
No, I was born perfectly normal. Skin, organs, the whole shebang. Even had a face that wasn't too bad to look at, if I do say so myself.
So what happened?
Skullduggery leaned against the worktop, arms folded across his chest.
I got into magic. Back then, back when I was, for want of a better term, alive, there were some pretty nasty people around. The world was seeing a darkness it might never have recovered from. It was war, you see. A secret war, but war nonetheless. There was a sorcerer, malevolent, worse than any of the others, and he had himself an army, and those of us who refused to fall in behind him found ourselves standing up against him. And we were winning. Eventually, after years of fighting this little war of ours, we were actually winning. His support was crumbling, his influence was fading, and he was staring defeat in the face. So he ordered one last desperate strike against all the leaders on our side.
Stephanie stared at him, lost in his voice.
I went up against his right-hand man, who had laid out a wickedly exquisite trap. I didn't suspect a thing until it was too late. So, I died. He killed me. The 23rd of October, it was, and my heart stopped beating. Once I was dead, they stuck my body up on a pike and burned it for all to see. They used me as a warning. They used the bodies of all the leaders they had killed as warnings. And to my utter horror, it worked.
What do you mean?
The tide turned. Our side started losing ground. Mevlant got stronger. It was more than I could stand, so I came back.
You just came back?
It's complicated. When I died, I never moved on. Something was holding me here, making me watch. I've never heard of it happening before that, and I haven't heard of it happening since, but it happened to me. So, when it got too much, I woke up, a bag of bones, literally. They had gathered up my bones and put them in a bag and thrown the bag into a river. So, that was a marvelous new experience right there.
Then what happened?
I put myself back together, which was rather painful, then climbed out of the river and rejoined the fight, and in the end, we won. We finally won. So, with Mevlant defeated, I quit that whole scene and struck out on my own for the first time in a few hundred years.
Stephanie blinked.
Few hundred?
It was a long war.
That man, he called you detective.
He obviously knows me by reputation, Skullduggery said, standing a little straighter. I solve mysteries now.
Really?
Quite good at it, too.
So, what, you're tracking down your head?
Skullduggery looked at her. If he'd had eyelids, he might well be blinking.
It'd be nice to have it back, sure, but...
So, you don't need it, like, so you can rest in peace?
No, not really.
Why did they take it? Was that another warning?
Oh, no, Skullduggery said with a little laugh. No, they didn't take it. I was sleeping. About 10 or 15 years ago, and these little goblin things ran up and nicked it right off my spinal column. Didn't notice it was gone till the next morning.
Stephanie frowned.
And you didn't feel that?
Well, like I said, I was asleep. Meditating, I suppose you'd call it. I can't see, hear, or feel anything when I'm meditating. Have you tried it?
No.
It's very relaxing. I think you'd like it.
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on you losing your head.
I didn't lose it, he said defensively. It was stolen.
Stephanie was feeling stronger now. She couldn't believe that she'd fainted.
Fainted? It was such an old woman thing to do.
She glanced up at Skullduggery.
You've had a very unusual life, haven't you?
I suppose I have. Not over yet, though. Well, technically it is, but...
Isn't there anything you miss?
About what?
About living?
Compared to how long I've been like this, I was only technically alive for a blink of an eye. I can't really remember enough about having a beating heart in my chest to miss it.
So there's nothing you miss?
I suppose I miss hair. I miss how it was, and how it was there, on top of my head. I suppose I miss my hair.
He took out his pocket watch, and his head jerked back.
Wow, look at the time. I've got to go, Stephanie.
Go where?
Things to do, I'm afraid. Number one is finding out why that nice gentleman was sent here, and number two is finding out who sent him.
You can't leave me alone, she said, following him into the living room.
Yes, he corrected. I can. You'll be perfectly safe.
The front door's off.
Well, yes. You'll be perfectly safe as long as they don't come through the front door.
He pulled on his coat, but she snatched his hat away. Are you taking my hat hostage? He asked doubtfully.
You're either staying here to make sure no one else attacks me, or you're taking me with you.
Skullduggery froze.
That, he said eventually, wouldn't be too safe for you.
Neither would being left here on my own.
But you can hide, he said, gesturing around the room. There's so many places to hide. I'm sure there are plenty of good solid wardrobes your size, even under a bed. You'd be surprised how many people don't check under beds these days.
Mr. Pleasant.
Skullduggery, please.
Skullduggery, you saved my life tonight. Are you going to undo all that effort by leaving me here so someone else can come along and just kill me?
That's a very defeatist attitude you've got there. I once knew a fellow, a little older than you. He wanted to join me in my adventures, wanted to solve mysteries that beggared belief. He kept asking, kept on at me about it. He finally proved himself after a long time, and we became partners.
And did you go on to have lots of exciting adventures?
I did. He didn't. He died on our very first case together. Horrible death. Messy, too. Lots of flailing around.
Well, I don't plan on dying anytime soon, and I've got something he didn't.
And that is?
Your hat. Take me with you, or I'll stand on it.
Skullduggery looked at her with his big hollow eye sockets, then held out his hand for his hat.
Don't say I didn't warn you.
Chapter 5. Meeting China Sorrows. Skullduggery Pleasant's car was a 1954 Bentley R-Type Continental, one of only 208 ever made, a car that housed a six-cylinder 4.5-litre engine and was retrofitted with central locking, climate control, satellite navigation, and a host of other modern conveniences. Skullduggery told Stephanie all of this when she asked. She'd have been happy with, "It's a Bentley." They left Gordon's land via a back road at the rear of the estate to avoid the flooding, a road that Stephanie hadn't even noticed until they were on it. Skullduggery told her he was a regular visitor here and knew all the little nooks and crannies. They passed a sign for Haggard, and she thought about asking him to drop her home, but quickly banished that idea from her head. If she went home now, she'd be turning her back on everything she'd just seen. She needed to know more. She needed to see more.
Where are we going?
She asked as they drove on.
Into the city. I've got a meeting with an old friend. She might be able to shed some light on recent events.
Why were you at the house?
Sorry.
Tonight. Not that I'm not grateful, but how come you happened to be nearby?
Ah, he said, nodding. Yes, I can see how that question would arise.
So, are you going to answer it?
That's unlikely.
Well, why not?
He glanced at her. Or at least, he turned his head a fraction.
The less you know about others, the better. You're a perfectly normal young lady, and after tonight you're going to return to your perfectly normal life. It wouldn't do for you to get too involved in this.
But I am involved.
But we can limit that involvement.
But I don't want to limit that involvement.
But it's what's best for you.
But I don't want that.
But it might...
Don't start another sentence with but.
Right. Sorry.
You can't expect me to forget about all of this. I've seen magic and fire in you, and I've learned about wars they don't tell us about in school. I've seen a world I never even knew existed.
Don't you want to get back to that world? It's safer there.
That's not where I belong.
Skullduggery turned his whole head to her and cocked it at an angle.
Funny. When I first met your uncle, that's what he said, too.
The things he wrote about,
Stephanie said, the idea just dawning on her.
Are they true?
His books? No, not a one.
Oh.
They're more inspired by true stories, really. He just changed them enough so he wouldn't insult anyone and get hunted down and killed. Your uncle was a good man. He really was. We solved many mysteries together.
Really?
Oh, yes. You should be proud to have had an uncle like him. Of course, he got me into 100 fights because I'd bring him somewhere and he wouldn't stop pestering people, but... fun times. Fun times.
They drove on until they saw the lights of the city looming ahead. Soon the darkness that surrounded the car was replaced with an orange haze that reflected off the wet roads. The city was quiet and still, the streets almost empty. They pulled into a small outdoor car park and Skullduggery switched off the engine and looked at Stephanie.
Okay, then you wait here.
Right.
He got out. 2 seconds passed, but Stephanie hadn't tagged along just to wait on the sidelines. She needed to see what other surprises the world had in store for her. She got out, and Skullduggery looked at her.
Stephanie, I'm not altogether sure you're respecting my authority.
No, I'm not.
I see. Okay, then.
He put on his hat and wrapped his scarf around his jaw, but did without the wig and the sunglasses. He clicked his keyring and the car beeped and the doors locked.
That's it?
He looked up. Sorry.
Aren't you afraid it might get stolen? We're not exactly in a good part of town.
It's got a car alarm.
Don't you, like, cast a spell or something to keep it safe?
No. It's a pretty good car alarm.
He started walking. She hurried to keep up.
Do you cast spells, then?
Sometimes. I try not to depend on magic these days. I try to get by on what's up here.
He tapped his head.
There's empty space up there.
Well, yes, Skullduggery said irritably. But you know what I mean.
What else can you do?
Sorry.
With magic. Show me something.
If Skullduggery had had eyebrows, they would most likely be arched.
What, a living skeleton isn't enough for you? You want more?
Yes,
Stephanie said.
Give me a tutorial.
He shrugged.
Well, I suppose it couldn't hurt. There are 2 types of mages, or sorcerers. Adepts practice one branch of magic, elementals practice another. Adepts are more aggressive, their techniques are more immediately powerful. In contrast, an elemental, such as myself, chooses the quieter course and works on mastering their command of the elements.
Command of the elements?
Maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. We don't command them as such. We manipulate them. We influence them.
Like what? Like earth, wind?
Water and fire, yes.
So show me.
Skullduggery tilted his head a little to the right, and she could hear the good humor in his voice.
Very well,
he said, and held up his open hand in front of her. She frowned, feeling a little chilly, and then she became aware of a droplet of water running down her face. In an instant her hair was drenched, like she just surfaced from a dive.
How did you do that?
She asked, shaking her head, flinging drops of water away from her.
You tell me,
Skullduggery answered.
I don't know. You did something to the moisture in the air?
He looked down at her.
Very good,
he said, impressed.
The first element, water. We can't part the Red Sea or anything, but we have a little influence with it.
Show me fire again,
Stephanie said eagerly. Skullduggery snapped his gloved fingers and sparks flew, and he curled his hand and the sparks grew to flame, and he held that ball of flame in his palm as they walked. The flame intensified, and Stephanie could feel her hair drying.
Wow,
she said.
Wow indeed,
Skullduggery responded and thrust his hand out, sending the ball of fire shooting through the air. It burned out as it arced in the night sky and faded to nothing.
What about Earth?
Stephanie asked. But Skullduggery shook his head.
You don't want to see that, and hopefully you'll never have to. The Earth power is purely defensive and purely for use as a last resort.
So what's the most powerful? Is it fire?
That's the flashiest. That gets all the wows. But you'd be surprised what a little air can do if you displace it properly. Displaced air doesn't just disappear. It needs somewhere to be displaced too.
Can I see?
They reached the edge of the car park and passed the low wall that encircled it. Skullduggery flexed his fingers and suddenly splayed his hand, snapping his palm towards the wall. The air rippled and the bricks exploded outwards. Stephanie stared at the brand new hole in the wall.
That, she said, is so cool.
They walked on, Stephanie glancing back at the wall every so often.
What about the adepts then? What can they do?
I knew a fellow a few years ago who could read minds. I met this woman once who could change her shape, become anyone, right in front of your eyes.
So who's stronger? Stephanie asked. An elemental or an adept?
Depends on the mage. An adept could have so many tricks up his sleeve, so many different abilities, that he could prove himself stronger than even the most powerful elemental. That's been known to happen.
The sorcerer, the worst one of all, was he an adept?
Actually, no. Mevalent was an elemental. It's rare that you get an elemental straying so far down the dark path, but it happens.
There was a question Stephanie had been dying to ask, but she didn't want to appear too eager. As casually as she could, thumbs hooked into the belt loops of her jeans, she said, as if she had just plucked this thought out of thin air,
"So, how do you know if you can do magic? Can anyone do it?"
"Not anyone. Relatively few, actually. Those who can usually congregate in the same areas, so there are small pockets of communities all over the world. In Ireland and the United Kingdom alone, there are 18 different neighborhoods populated solely by sorcerers."
"Can you be a sorcerer without realizing it?"
"Oh, yes. Some people walk around every day, bored with their lives, having no idea that there's a world of wonder at their fingertips. And they'll live out their days completely oblivious, and they'll die without knowing how great they could have been."
"That's really sad."
"Actually, it's quite amusing."
"No, it's not. It's sad. How would you like it if you never discovered what you could do?"
"I wouldn't know any better," Skullduggery answered, stopping beside her. "We're here."
End of Disc 1. Disc 2. Stephanie looked up. They'd arrived outside a crumbling old tenement building, its wall defaced with graffiti and its windows cracked and dirty. She followed him up the concrete steps and into the foyer, and together they ascended the sagging staircase. The first floor was quiet and smelled of damp. On the second floor, splintered shards of light escaped through the cracks between door and doorway into the otherwise dark corridor. They could hear the sound of a TV from one of the apartments. When they got to the third floor, Stephanie knew they'd arrived. The third floor was clean. It didn't smell, and it was well lit. It was like an entirely different building. She followed Skullduggery to the middle of the corridor and noticed that none of the doors were numbered. She looked at the door Skullduggery knocked on, the door that had a plaque fastened to it. Library. While they waited there, Skullduggery said,
"One more thing. No matter how much you might want to, do not tell her your name."
The door opened before she could ask any more questions, and a thin man with large round spectacles peered out. His nose was hooked, and his wiry hair was receding. He wore a checked suit with a bow tie. He glanced at Stephanie, then nodded to Skullduggery, and opened the door wide for them to come through. Stephanie realized why none of the doors were numbered. It was because they all led into the same room. The walls between apartments had been taken away in order to accommodate the vast number of books on the shelves. Stacks and stacks of books, a labyrinth of bookshelves that stretched from one side of the building to the other. As they followed the bespectacled man through the maze, she saw more people, their attention focused on their reading, people half hidden in shadow, people who didn't look exactly right. In the middle of the library was an open space, like a clearing in a forest, and in this open space stood the most beautiful woman Stephanie had ever seen. Her hair was black as raven wings, and her eyes were the palest blue. Her features were so delicate, Stephanie feared they might break if she smiled. And then the lady smiled, and Stephanie felt such warmth that for an instant she never wanted to be anywhere else but at this lady's side.
"Stop that," said Skullduggery.
The lady let her eyes move to him, and her smile turned playful. Stephanie stared, enraptured. Her body felt so heavy, so clumsy. All she wanted to do with her life was just stand here, in this spot, and gaze at pure and true beauty.
"Stop that," Skullduggery said again, and the lady laughed and shrugged and looked back at Stephanie.
"Sorry about that," she said,
and Stephanie felt a fog lift from her mind. She felt dizzy and staggered. But Skullduggery was there, a hand on the small of her back, supporting her.
"My apologies,"
the lady said, giving her a small bow.
"I do forget the effect I have on people. First impressions and all that."
"Seems like every time you meet someone new, you forget that little fact," Skullduggery said.
"I'm a scatterbrain. What can I say?"
Skullduggery grunted and turned to Stephanie.
"Don't feel self-conscious. The first time anyone sets eyes on China, they fall in love. Believe me, the effect lessens the more you get to know her."
"Lessens,"
the woman named China said.
"But never entirely goes away, does it, Skullduggery?"
The detective took off his hat and looked at China, but ignored her question. China smiled at Stephanie and handed her a business card. It was eggshell white and bore a single telephone number, etched with delicate elegance.
"Feel free to call me if you ever stumble across a book or an item you think I might be interested in. Skullduggery used to. He doesn't anymore. Too much water has flowed under that proverbial bridge, I'm afraid. Oh, where are my manners? My name is China Sorrows, my dear. And you are..."
Stephanie was about to tell China her name when Skullduggery turned his head to her sharply, and she remembered what he had said. She frowned. The urge to tell this woman everything was almost overwhelming.
"You don't need to know her name," Skullduggery said. "All you need to know is that she witnessed someone breaking into Gordon Edgley's house. He was looking for something. What would Gordon have that someone might want?"
"You don't know who he was?"
"He wasn't anyone. His master, that's who I'm after."
"So, who do you think his master is?"
Skullduggery didn't answer, and China laughed.
"Serpine again? My darling, you think Serpine is the culprit behind practically every crime?"
"That's because he is."
"So, why come to me?"
"You hear things."
"Do I?"
"People talk to you."
"I am very approachable."
"I was wondering if you'd heard anything. Rumors, whispers, anything."
"Nothing that would help you."
"But you have heard something."
"I've heard nonsense. I've heard something that doesn't even deserve to be called a rumor. Apparently Serpine has been making inquiries about the scepter of the ancients."
"What about it?"
"He's looking for it."
"What do you mean? The scepter's a fairy tale."
"Like I said, it's nonsense."
Skullduggery fell silent for a moment, as if he was storing that piece of information away for further study. When he spoke again, it was with a new line of questioning.
"So, what would Gordon have that he, or anyone else, might want?"
"Probably quite a lot,"
China answered.
"Dear Gordon was like me. He was a collector. But I don't think that's the question you should be asking."
Skullduggery thought for a moment.
"Ah."
Stephanie looked at the two of them.
"What?" What?
The question, Skullduggery said, is not what did Gordon have that someone might want to steal, but rather, what did Gordon have that someone had to wait until he was dead in order to steal it? Stephanie looked at him.
There's a difference?
China answered her.
There are items that cannot be taken, possessions that cannot be stolen. In such a case, the owner must be dead before anyone else can take advantage of its powers.
If you hear anything that might be of use, Skullduggery said, will you let me know?
And what do I get in return?
China responded, that smile playing on her lips again.
My appreciation.
Tempting. That is tempting.
Then how about this? Skullduggery said. Do it as a favor, for a friend.
A friend?
China said.
After all these years, after everything that's happened, are you saying that you're my friend again?
I was talking about Gordon.
China laughed and Stephanie followed Skullduggery as he walked back through the stacks. They left the library and traveled back the way they'd come. When they were out on the street, Stephanie spoke up at last.
So that was China Sorrows,
she said.
Yes, that was, Skullduggery responded. A woman not to be trusted.
Beautiful name, though.
Like I said, names are power. There are three names for everyone. The name you're born with, the name you're given, and the name you take. Everyone, no matter who they are, is born with a name. You were born with a name. Do you know what it is?
Is this a trick question?
Do you know what your name is?
Yes, Stephanie Edgley.
No.
No?
That's your given name. That's the name other people handed you. If a mage with any kind of knowledge wanted to, he could use that name to influence you, to attain some small degree of control, to make you stand, sit, speak, things like that.
Like a dog?
I suppose so.
You're likening me to a dog?
No, he said, then paused. Well, yes.
Oh, cheers.
But you have another name, a real name, a true name, a name unique to you and you alone.
What is it?
I don't know. You don't know it either, at least not consciously. This name gives you power, but it would also give other people absolute power over you. If someone knew it, they could command your loyalty, your love, everything about you. Your free will could be totally eradicated, which is why we keep our true names hidden.
So, what's the third name?
The name you take. It can't be used against you. It can't be used to influence you, and it's your first defense against a sorcerer's attack. Your taken name seals your given name, protects it, and that's why it's so important to get it right.
So Skullduggery is the name you took?
It is.
What about me? Should I have a third name?
He hesitated for only a moment.
If you're going to be accompanying me on this, then yes, you probably should.
And am I going to be accompanying you?
That depends. Do you need your parents' permission?
Stephanie's parents wanted her to find her own way in life. That's what they'd said countless times in the past. Of course, they'd been referring to school subjects and college applications and job prospects. Presumably, at no stage did they factor living skeletons and magic underworlds into their considerations. If they had, their advice would probably have been very different. Stephanie shrugged.
No, not really.
But that's good enough for me.
They reached the car and got in, and as they pulled out onto the road, she looked at him.
So who's this Serpine you were talking about?
Nefarian Serpine is one of the bad guys. I suppose now that Meveland is gone, he'd be considered the bad guy.
What's so bad about him?
The purr of the engine was all that filled the car for a few moments.
Serpine is an adept, Skullduggery said at last. He was Mevalent's most trusted lieutenant. You heard what China was saying about how she is a collector, how Gordon was a collector. Serpine is a collector, too. He collects magic. He is tortured, maimed, and killed in order to learn other people's secrets. He's committed untold atrocities in order to uncover obscure rituals, searching for the one ritual that he and religious fanatics like him have been seeking for generations. Back when the war broke out, he had this weapon.
These days he's full of surprises, but he still uses it because, quite frankly, there's no defense against it.
What's the weapon?
To put it simply, agonizing death.
Agonizing death? On its own? Not like fired from a gun or anything?
He just has to point his red right hand at you and, well, like I said, agonizing death. It's a necromancy technique.
Necromancy?
Death magic. A particularly dangerous adept discipline. I don't know how he learned it, but learn it he did.
And what does the scepter thing have to do with all this?
Nothing. It has nothing to do with anything.
Well, what is it?
It's a weapon of unstoppable destructive power. Or it would be if it actually existed. It's a rod about the length of your thigh bone. Actually, I think I might have a picture of it.
He pulled the car over and got out to open the Bentley's boot. Stephanie had never been to this part of town before. The streets were quiet and empty. She could see the bridge over the canal in the distance. Moments later, Skullduggery was back behind the wheel. They were driving again, and Stephanie had a leather-bound book on her lap. "What's this?" she asked, opening the clasp and flicking through the pages.
"Our most popular myths and legends," said Skullduggery. "You just passed the scepter."
She flicked back and came to a reproduction of a painting of a wide-eyed man reaching for a golden staff with a black crystal embedded in its hilt. The scepter was glowing, and he was shielding his eyes. On the opposite page was another picture, this time of a man holding the scepter, surrounded by cowering figures, their heads turned away. "Who's this guy?"
"He's an ancient. In the legends, they were the very first sorcerers. The first to wield the power of the elements. The first to use magic. They lived apart from the mortal world, had no interest in it. They had their own ways, their own customs, and their own gods. Eventually, they decided that they wanted to have their own destinies too, so they rose up against their gods, rather nasty beings called the Faceless Ones, and battled them on the land, in the skies, and in the oceans. The Faceless Ones, being immortal, won every battle, until the ancients constructed a weapon powerful enough to drive them back. The scepter."
"You sound like you know the story well."
"Tales around the campfire might seem quaint now, but it's all we had before movies. The Faceless Ones were banished, forced back to wherever they came from."
"So, what's happening here? He's killing his gods?"
"Yep. The scepter was fueled by the ancients' desire to be free. That was the most powerful force they had at their disposal."
"So it's a force for freedom?"
"Originally. However, once the ancients no longer had the Faceless Ones to tell them what to do, they started fighting among themselves, and they turned the scepter on each other and fueled it with hate."
The streetlights played on his skull as they passed in and out of darkness, flashing bone white in hypnotic rhythm.
"The last ancient," he continued, "having driven his gods away, having killed all his friends and all his family, realized what he had done and hurled the scepter deep into the earth, where the ground swallowed it."
"What did he do then?"
"Probably went for a snooze. I don't know, it's a legend, it's an allegory, it didn't really happen."
"So why does Serpine think it's real?"
"Now, that is puzzling. Like his master before him, he believes some of our darker myths are more disturbing legends. He believes the world was a better place when the Faceless Ones were in charge. They didn't exactly approve of humanity, you see, and they demanded worship."
"The ritual that he's been looking for, is it to bring them back?"
"It is indeed."
"So he might think that the scepter which drove them away could somehow call them home, right?"
"People believe all kinds of things when it comes to their religion."
"Do you believe in any of it? The ancients? Faceless Ones, any of it?"
"I believe in me, Stephanie, and that's enough for now."
"So could the scepter be real?"
"Highly unlikely."
"So what does any of this have to do with my uncle?"
"I don't know," Skullduggery admitted. "That's why they call it a mystery."
Light filled the car, and suddenly the world was bucking. The only sounds, a terrifying crash and the shriek of metal on metal. Stephanie lurched against her seatbelt and slammed her head against the window. The street outside tilted wildly, and she realized the Bentley was flipping over. She heard Skullduggery curse beside her,
and for an instant she was weightless, and then the Bentley hit the ground again and jarred her against the dashboard. It rocked back onto its tires. Stephanie looked at her knees, her eyes wide but her brain too stunned to think. "Look up," said a faint voice in her head. "Look up to see what's happening." The Bentley was still, its engine cut out. But there was another engine, a car door opening and closing. "Look up. Footsteps, running footsteps. Look up now." Skullduggery beside her, not moving. "Look up, there's someone coming for you. Look up now." A window exploded beside her for the second time that night, and the man from the house was grabbing her and hauling her out of the car. Chapter 6. A Man Apart. His clothes were ragged and charred, but his skin had been untouched by the fireball that had enveloped him at Gordon's house. She glimpsed his face as she was dragged through the yellow light of the Bentley's headlamps, a face that was twisted in anger and hatred, and then she was lifted and slammed onto the bonnet of the car that had hit them. His hands had her collar bunched, his knuckles digging into her throat.
"You will die," he hissed. "Right here and now, if you do not give me that damned key."
Her hands were on his, trying to break his grip. Her head felt light, blood pounding in her temples.
"Please,"
she whispered, trying to breathe.
"You're going to make me look bad,"
the man growled.
"My master is going to think I'm a fool if I can't get one stupid little key off one stupid little girl."
The street was empty around them. Shop fronts and businesses closed for the night. No one was going to hear her. No one was coming to help her. Where was Skullduggery? The man lifted her off the bonnet and slammed her down again. Stephanie cried out in pain, and the man leaned in, his right forearm pressed beneath her chin.
"I'll snap your scrawny neck," he hissed.
"I don't know anything about a key,"
Stephanie gasped.
"If you don't know anything, you're of no use to me, and I'll kill you here."
She looked up at that horribly twisted face and stopped trying to pull his hands away. Instead, she dug her thumb into the bullet hole in his shoulder. He screamed and let her go and staggered back, cursing, and Stephanie rolled off the car and ran to the Bentley. Skullduggery was pounding at the door, but it had buckled under the impact, trapping his leg.
"Go!"
he shouted at her through the broken window.
"Get away!"
Stephanie glanced back, saw a figure loom up and pushed herself away from the car. She slipped on the wet road but scrambled to her feet and ran, the man right behind her clutching his injured shoulder. He lunged and she ducked, caught a streetlight and swung herself from her course, and the man shot by her and sprawled onto the pavement. She took off the opposite way, passing the two cars and running on. The street was too long, too wide, and there was nowhere she could lose him. She turned off into a narrow lane and sprinted into the shadows. She heard him behind her, heard the footsteps that seemed to be moving much more quickly than her own. She didn't dare look back. She didn't want the fear that was lending her speed to suddenly sabotage her escape. It was too dark to make out anything ahead of her. She couldn't see one arm's length ahead. She could be about to run smack into a wall, and she wouldn't... Wall! Stephanie twisted at the last moment and got her hands up and hit the wall, then pushed away, kicking off without losing too much momentum, continuing around the corner. The man couldn't see in the dark any better than she could, and she heard him hit the wall and yell out a curse. Up ahead was a break in the darkness. She saw a taxi pass. The man slipped and stumbled behind her. She was getting away. All she had to do was run up to the nearest person she could find, and the man wouldn't dare follow her. Stephanie plunged out of the shadows and screamed for help, but the taxi was gone and the street was empty. She screamed again, this time in desperation. The street lights tinted everything orange and stretched her shadow out before her. Then there was another shadow moving up behind, and she threw herself to one side as the man barreled past, narrowly missing her. The canal was ahead, the canal that flowed through the city. She ran for it, aware that the man was once again behind her and gaining fast. She felt his fingers on her shoulder. The first touch was fleeting, but the second was a grip. His hand curled around her shoulder and tightened just as she reached the edge of the canal, and she managed to throw herself forward before he could drag her back. She heard a panicked shriek from behind and realized she had pulled him after her. Then the freezing water enveloped them both. The cold stunned her for a moment, but Stephanie fought it and kicked out. She clutched at water and dragged it down to her sides, just like she had done countless times off the haggard beach. Now she was moving up, up to where the lights were. She broke the surface with a gasp and turned her head, saw the man struggling, flailing his arms in terror. For a moment she thought he couldn't swim, but it was more than that. The water was hurting him, working through him like acid, stripping pieces of him away. His cries became mere guttural sounds, and Stephanie watched as he came apart and was silent and most dead. She turned from the bits of him that floated to her and ploughed through the water. Her hands and feet were already numb with the cold, but she kept going until the bridge was far behind. Shivering, Stephanie reached the edge of the canal and managed to haul herself out. Arms crossed over her chest, trainers squelching with every step, and her hair plastered to her scalp, she hurried back to the Bentley. When she got there, the Bentley was empty. Stephanie hung back out of the light. A truck passed, slowing when it approached the crash. When the driver didn't see anyone, he drove on. Stephanie didn't move from her spot. A few minutes later, Skullduggery emerged from the narrow lane she'd been chased down. He was walking quickly, looking up and down the street as he returned to his car. Stephanie stepped out of the shadows. "Hey!" she said.
"Stephanie!"
Skullduggery exclaimed, rushing over to her.
"You're all right?"
"I went for a swim,"
she said, trying to stop her teeth from chattering.
"What happened?" he asked. "Where is he?"
"Here and there."
The light breeze was passing through her soaking garments.
"The water kind of took him apart."
Skullduggery nodded.
"It happens."
He held out his hand, and she felt herself drying, and saw the water drifting off her, collecting as mist in the air over her head.
"You're not surprised?" she asked.
He moved the cloud away and released it. A faint shower fell to the street.
"Certain types of adept magic don't come cheap. As we saw at Gordon's house, your attacker had made himself impervious to fire and was probably very proud of himself for doing so. Unfortunately for him, the cost of that little spell was that a large amount of water would be lethal. Every big spell has a hidden snag."
He clicked his fingers and conjured fire, and Stephanie started to feel warm again.
"Neat trick," she said. "You'll have to teach me it sometime."
With quite a bit of effort, Stephanie pulled open the car door. She wiped the broken glass from the seat and got in, buckling the seatbelt. Skullduggery went around the other side to his own broken window and climbed in behind the wheel. He twisted the key and the engine turned, complained, and then came to life. Her body was tired. Her mind was tired. Her limbs felt heavy and her eyes wanted to close. She dug her mobile phone out of her pocket. Miraculously, the canal water hadn't ruined it. She pressed a button and the time flashed up, and she groaned, then looked outside as the first light of the morning started to seep into the sky.
"What's wrong?" Skullduggery asked. "Are you hurt?"
"No," she said. "But I will be if I don't get back to Gordon's house. Mum will be picking me up soon."
"You don't look too happy."
"Well, I don't want to go back to that world. A boring old town with nosy neighbors and nasty aunts."
"You'd rather stay in a world where you get attacked twice in one night."
"I know it sounds crazy, but yes, things happen here."
"I'm going to see a friend later today, someone who might be able to help us out. You can come along if you want."
"Really?"
"I think you might have a real feel for this line of work."
Stephanie nodded and gave a little shrug, and when she spoke, she fought hard to keep the sheer joy out of her voice.
"And what about magic?"
"What about it?"
"Will you teach me?"
"You don't even know if you're capable of doing magic."
"How do I find out? Is there a test or something?"
"Yes. We cut off your head. If it grows back, you can do magic."
"You're being funny again, aren't you?"
"So glad you noticed."
"So will you teach me?"
"I'm not a teacher. I'm a detective. I already have a career."
"Oh, right. It's just, I'd really like to learn, and you know it all."
"Your flattery is subtle."
"But it's okay. If you don't want to teach me, that's okay. I suppose I could always ask China."
Skullduggery looked at her.
"China won't teach you. She won't teach you because there is nothing that she does that is not for her own gain. You mightn't see it at first. You might think she's actually being nice to you. But you can never trust her."
Okay, then.
Okay, so we're agreed.
We're agreed, no trusting China.
Good. Glad we've got that sorted.
So will you teach me magic?
He sighed. Dealing with you is going to be a trial, isn't it?
That's what my teachers at school say.
This is going to be fun, Skullduggery said dryly. I just know it. Skullduggery dropped Stephanie off at Gordon's house, and half an hour later her mother's car splashed through huge puddles and Stephanie went outside to meet her. She managed to keep her mother's attention off